Annette, I warned you we'd be back, and we are. It's the Taylor Report, CIT, 89.5 FM. And we are going to be speaking with, maybe, do we have Zafar? Zafar Bengash is on the line, I think. Are you there?
Yes, Phil, I am.
Well, great to be talking to you, Zafar. We've just had some words with Eva Bartlett, who's a heroic Canadian journalist. She went to see for herself and reported, and we've also spoken to Stephen Gowans, who is pointing out that the media here is in lockstep and always has been with the people who run the country rather than serving the population with news. But now you serve the population with news. People can go to your site, crescent-online.net. Did I get that?
That is correct, yes.
Now, Zafar, shocking things have been happening. My goodness. I want to emphasize the positive things. This has been a tremendous thing. Give us your estimate of the significance of this victory, the liberation. And I insist on that word. I'm so tired of people trying to drag it down and divide it into quarters. But it's the liberation of Aleppo.
Well, I'm glad that you used the word liberation, because that's the word that we have been using as well. Because, unfortunately, in what is referred to as the mainstream media, and whether you talk about the New York Times, Washington Post, or the BBC, or CBC, etc., they all talk about either the fall of Aleppo, which suggests that as if somehow yes. the terrorists that had occupied the eastern part of the city are some kind of a legitimate entity, when they are not. They are mm-hmm. mercenaries and they are terrorists. Mm-hmm. And the legitimate government of Syria and its allies have liberated that city from the clutches of these terrorists. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The other label that they use for the liberation of Aleppo is that that's the end of the revolution. Again, it suggests as if there was a popular revolution going on in Syria, when in fact we know, as I'm sure Eva Bartlett would have pointed out, and I'm very glad that you had her on your show, because mm-hmm. she has done absolutely incredible work. I mean, one cannot really thank her enough for the work that she and Vanessa Bailey have done, not only by going to Syria, but by going to Aleppo itself and bringing first-hand information from there. And she has pointed out that there are mercenaries from 101 countries, or were there in Syria, in eastern Aleppo. Now, anybody who calls that a revolution, they really need to get their heads examined.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the context of what you said, the question with respect to the significance of the liberation of Aleppo, I believe that it is enormously important. There are two separate aspects over here. The first is that Aleppo, which is the second largest city in Syria, and it was Syria's commercial hub, that has been liberated. So now about 80% of Syria's population is in areas that are under government control. That's the population. Obviously, there are vast areas of the countryside that are sparsely populated and still controlled by these terrorist groups like Idlib province and Homs and Hama, etc., parts of it. But the majority of the population is now in areas where the government writ applies. So that's the first development, which is a very, very mm-hmm. significant development, because now the government is essentially on a roll. Of course, along with its allies, the Hezbollah fighters, other militias, and also advisors from Iran's Revolutionary Guards, they have incidentally, both Hezbollah as well as Iran's Revolutionary Guards have played a very significant role in the liberation of eastern Aleppo. Now, the other factor is that I'm sure if you've been following the news, you would have noted that on December the 20th, there were two meetings that took place in Moscow. In the first meeting, or in one of the meetings, the foreign ministers of Russia, Iran, and Turkey participated. And in the second meeting, the defense ministers of Russia, Iran, and Turkey participated. Now, the first meeting of the top diplomats of these three countries, they agreed that they would now work for peace so that there could be an enduring peace in Syria. They also vowed to extend the ceasefire to other parts of Syria as well. And one of the interesting comments that the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, made was, when he was actually asked at a press conference in Moscow about America's involvement and the UN's involvement. And he made a very direct statement by saying that sitting with the Americans is pointless because it doesn't get you anywhere, and that the UN has failed in its mission. So now these three countries are going to work for peace in Syria. In other words, he signaled that as far as America and its NATO allies and its regional puppets are concerned, they are irrelevant to the equation in Syria now. They are not the ones that are interested in peace. They are not the ones that are going to bring about peace. And in fact, for the first time in living memory, any major decision has been made in the world in which the United States has not been involved. I think it's an enormously significant development.
Absolutely.
Which indicates
they had a meeting without Samantha Powers.
Absolutely. And that woman acting like Mother Teresa was going, you know, sort of pretending that, you know, she's some kind of a humanitarian and so on, and making outrageous statements at the United Nations, making scandalous allegations about, you know, when she said that there was a massacre of civilians, etc. There has been absolutely no proof. And that rumor was started by the United Nations when one of their officials said that we have got reports without indicating as to where these reports came from. And they were, in fact, when a UN official was asked, what is the source of this news? The UN official said that we don't know. So they don't know the source
Something
of that.
We
heard it from somewhere. And then the UN Secretary General goes ahead and he says that we have received credible reports. And now the rest of the mainstream media runs away with this nonsensical allegation, and then they say, oh, the UN has said that there has been a massacre in eastern Aleppo. You see how this whole story
They played
evolved.
A terrible role. There's not really no question that the UN has acted as just a cat's paw
Absolutely.
For the U.S. We had on this show a man named Lenman. I shouldn't call him a man name. He's a scholar or author. And he said to us that the UN ought to be regarded as a wholly owned U.S. subsidiary.
And he's absolutely right. Because, you see, the way the UN has conducted itself, it's absolutely outrageous. Not only the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, but the U.N. Secretary General himself. And we know that, you know, his term is about to end, and he has indicated that he would like to perhaps become the president of South Korea.
And the U.S. has a lot to say about that because they occupy that country and have since 1945.
Exactly. And so that's how he is positioning himself. And to do that, he has to suck up to the Americans and tell these terrible lies. In fact, I feel that he has tarnished his image beyond repair. And I think if he has any decency, he should be ashamed of himself by making statements like that. Because, I mean, we know that the United Nations, unfortunately, has never been much of a credible institution because it essentially acts as a branch office of the U.S. State Department. But in this episode, it has really, really exposed itself.
Yes.
And so what has happened in Aleppo is obviously enormously significant both from the internal Syrian situation as well as on the global level, because now we see new players or new alignments that have emerged and that have made a very major progress in Syria in terms of liberating Aleppo from the clutches of these terrorist groups.
Yeah. Now we're speaking to Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. And Zafar, I think you put your finger on it. I mean, the possibility of peace is there. The parties that could do it are now talking to each other. But it looks to me like the maximum pressure is going to be brought to bear on this really quite unstable person called Erdogan. And I want to two things about him. I want you to tell me if explain to me how this curious thing happened, where we had this 7-year-old girl who said she's about to disappear from the earth because Assad was bombing her, and then the next day she pops up and she's sitting in the lap of Mr. President Erdogan in Turkey. Actually, about 48 hours. I was a little quick on the trip. But how in the world did that happen? Is he that close? Can he put his hand into Aleppo?
Well, let me tell you something. Unfortunately, Mr. Erdogan is playing a very, very dirty game. He thinks that he can determine the outcome in Syria. Turkish journalists have reported that 70% of the weapons going to the terrorists go through the Turkish border. That's Turkish journalists that have reported. So it's not somebody making an allegation from the outside, number one. Secondly, the man who assassinated the Russian ambassador in Ankara on December the 19th, the police, the off-duty police officer, was in fact very close to Erdogan's family. This has also been reported by Turkish newspapers and journalists. Okay, so what we are beginning to see is Erdogan and his party and his henchmen getting exposed in the very dirty role that they have been playing in Turkey all along. Now, you asked about this girl who appeared, who was tweeting from Aleppo. Now, let me quote to you Vanessa Bailey. She appeared on Russian TV, RT, on December the 16th, and there was this guy, this American guy by the name of Brent Budowski, who writes for The Hill in Washington, D.C., although Mr. Budowski is based in Arizona. He was talking about these allegations that are being made against the Syrian government and the so-called massacre of civilians, etc. Incidentally, they gave a figure of 82, and he compared it to the Rwanda genocide and so on. Got totally out of sync, the whole thing. But anyway, Vanessa, to her great credit, she said, "Well, look, I would like to know, where did you get your information from?" And the guy turned around and he said, "Oh, it was reported in the New York Times." And he said, "But the New York Times has no reporters in Aleppo." She said, "I was there for 3 days. I talked to people over there. We never heard of these things at all. There's nothing going on." And she said, "Look, there is no internet over there. There is no Skype over there. There is no connection in Aleppo. So how did anybody provide you any information or news from there?" She said, "Nobody can tweet from there." So all of these things that are going on, this girl tweeting from Aleppo, etc., this is the same thing as we had in 2011 when we had this story emerge that there is the gay girl from Damascus. It turned out to be an American student sitting in Scotland tweeting from there.
A former army officer, by the way, retired.
Exactly, sending out these stories and everybody was taken in by this gay girl in Damascus. Yes. Exactly the same thing has been happening with this girl who, as you pointed out, she ended up in, or she certainly pops up in Turkey, sitting in the lap of Erdogan. Now, it seems to me that perhaps she was in Turkey all along, and somebody from there was tweeting these things and feeding to, number one, this so-called Syria Observatory for Human Rights, which is a one-man organization based in Coventry, England.
Yeah, one a man, laundromat.
Exactly.
They launder the truth, as they say.
Absolutely.
They bleach it.
Everybody runs with it. I mean, it's so incredible that, we see the amount of distortion, amount of lies that are being told over it. It's so incredible. I mean, I think people are beginning to wake up to this reality of how these lies are being spun constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I always, when people talk about that, I always point a couple of things to them. I say, look, back in 2003, February of 2003, they should remember what General Colin Powell, who was at that time the U.S. Secretary of State, appeared at the United Nations and claiming that Saddam Hussein had factories of chemical weapons and he was going to drop these chemical weapons, etc. And then it turned out that this was completely false. There were no chemical weapons, no chemical factories. Everything had been destroyed. That was in February of 2003. If you go back to 1990, October of 1990, when Saddam's army had invaded and occupied Kuwait, at the U.S. Congress, there were hearings being held, and there was supposedly a Kuwaiti girl by the name of Nayyara, 14-year-old, pretty girl, nice, big eyes. Mm-hmm. And she testified that she was in Kuwait, and she saw Iraqi troops snatch babies out of incubators in Kuwaiti hospitals and throw the babies on the hospital floor, and the Iraqi troops took these incubators away to Iraq. That was the story that she made, and she even cried over there. Yes. And her story was then repeated by Bush Sr., who was the president at the time. Amnesty International took on this, and based on that lie, prior to that, the majority of the American people were opposed to attacking Iraq. After that, the New York Times and I think CBS combined did a poll, and they found out that after that story appeared or they heard that testimony, 83% of the Americans were now in favor of attacking Iraq. You know, in March of 1991, after Iraq had been attacked and, you know, Iraqi army driven out of Kuwait, etc., and the massacre perpetrated on the highway of death, a Canadian professor from British Columbia went to Kuwait. He was curious. He wanted to investigate what had happened with those babies and what had happened with the incubators. And he found out when he went to this Kuwaiti hospital, he found out that there was absolutely no such thing that had happened. Mm. None whatsoever. This was a Canadian professor who testified to that. Okay. And then the whole to complete the story, that girl Nayyara had not been to Kuwait. She actually happened to be the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador in Washington, D.C. And she was fed this nonsense by this PR firm, Hill & Knowlton, who used to previously work for the White House, for the Bush White House, the senior Bush, and they were the ones that had fed this story to her. So these are the kinds of lies that are constantly peddled in order to mislead people into supporting these terrible, terrible war crimes that these warmongers perpetrate. And this 7-year-old girl that they talk about that she tweeted, can a 7-year-old girl be able to tweet anything? I mean, this is incredible that, you know, they're...
Can't be done. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Zafar. But you have put your finger on the problem, and I'm very glad that you were a guest, Zafar Benkash, crescent-international.net.
Hyphen.net, thank you.
Online.net. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Indigenous Waves is coming in, so we better get out of here. And it's Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.